Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves. And I am here in Boise, Idaho, with longtime, very dear friends of mine, Ray and Janet Brenly, of Gerilove Scottish Deerhounds fame, great fame. And I am so excited. You guys that listen to the podcast regularly have heard my story when I did the Sighthound specific presentation. And I talked about Ray and how he would show these dogs. And there's so much history here and so much knowledge I am really excited to share with you guys. So welcome. Thank you. I know it took me 3 years to nail your feet to the ground. All right. So tell me the 411. What got you started? Go. Jana, he's nodding at you.
He's nodding at me? Well, Ray showed a Scottish Deerhound when he was professionally handling. And when he retired in 1978, he had two dogs that he really regretted having to leave behind. And one was a well-known golden retriever by the name of, let me see if I can remember this, Champion Kachina's 20 Carat, Josh. He was a very popular dog in the day.
And in a lot of pedigrees of goldens today.
Yeah, he's in a lot of pedigrees of goldens today. And the other one happened to be a Scottish Deerhound bitch by the name of Champion Shannon's Guinevere. Do you want to take it from here?
Okay. When I talked to the client that I showed for, how's Gigi? Oh, Ray, she's sitting there on the couch getting fat. So I retired her too. Went through this handler, that handler. I said, why don't you send her up to me? We'll co-own her. I'll pay the bill. And Jana was breeding Borzoi at the time. And I'll go to the show when I'm assisting her to help her with their Borzoi. And she'll go, dear, because I love the bitch. I had her for over a year. She was a great bitch. I won some groups with her and hated to quit with her.
Yeah.
So she did. And that
was your foundation for the deerhounds?
Well, it turned out to be that. We didn't have that intent.
But sometimes things happen.
But in that short period of time, in what was it, 81, 82?
81, I think. She was number two deerhound. And she went to, I think, 11 shows that year.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we'll get to this in a little bit. Wouldn't that be a dream, right?
So we had people, good dog people, saying, wow, that's a great bitch, Ray. You going to breed her? You going to breed her? No. And of course, I had a breeder's heart because I bred shepherds. That was my first breed.
That's what I was going to double check on that. I thought shepherds are where you started.
I started there, and a lot of great mentors and we bred a lot of dogs and we were successful and went to handling. But anyway, finally I gave up and said, maybe it is a shame to waste these genes.
Yeah.
So we started searching for a sire, a stud dog for her. Jana took that on, and we didn't have internet then.
Didn't have the benefit of that.
About the changes. I mean, that to me is one of the biggest, how hard it used to be to try and track down pedigrees and track down dogs, which today we can get with the click of a finger.
Right.
Yeah.
And crazy. Remember, we were in Boise, Idaho, very isolated. Mm-hmm. Most of the deerhounds are on the East Coast and the Midwest, and it remains the same today. So we were out here pretty much on our own, no mentors.
No man's land.
Right. No, nothing.
Anyway, that started our
interest
in deerhounds, and we ended up breeding her and had success with the first litter, and we went on and on.
And you were AKC Breeder of the Year in
16.
I thought it was recently.
16, yeah.
Yeah. And we bred our last litter in 2015.
Wow.
And we were planning on hanging up the whelping box.
At a certain point, right?
Yeah.
But it all capped off everything. But the bitch that we had, the foundation bitch, came back to haunt us some years later.
In a good way or a bad
way? Oh, good way. Great way. I went over to Norway to bring back a bitch that we have a very dear friend there that we breed back and forth. And she took me to dinner at Espen and Augie's house.
Espen Ing.
Augie Yetness.
And we visited till 3 in the morning, you know, dog people.
And I fear that for us today.
Yeah. But Espen and I were talking, and he's got a memory like an elephant. He knows our pedigrees better than we do. And
he's amazing.
Yeah, he is. And he's a real student of the sport of the dogs.
Right.
And he's arrogant. And he's smart. And he says, Ray, tell me, everywhere I go in the world, I see this deerhound. I can recognize a Jarlove deerhound. He says, how do you do that?
So tell us, how do you do that?
What is your secret?
Can you just hear it?
I can totally hear it.
I know.
So I'm asking much more nicely, I'm saying.
I know. And I have a lot of respect for him. And so I tried to figure out what I could say as an answer. First thing I thought of, I said, well, you know, Jan and I agree on maybe, you know, 95-98% of what we see. And so we got four eyes watching us in it too.
Right. And then you have a vision. And your vision.
Well, that came later.
I understand, but I mean, Espen's right. It is very identifiable. You can pick out one of your deerhounds across the show site.
But we did all these things, and we didn't know why.
Okay, so what did you do?
So I was bothered by that question and not having a good answer. Mm. Came back from the trip, brought the bitch home that we had, a stud feed puppy we brought back, and in the mail, that short period of time that I'd been gone or around that time was this questionnaire from our Gazette
columnist.
And one of the earlier questions was, who was your first deerhound you saw? Where was it? When was it? Who had it? And I didn't have an answer for it. She did, because it was Gigi, our foundation bitch. That was her first deerhound. But I went back and I kept thinking. Where did I? Oh, I remember. It was at Sir Francis Drake in the late 60s. And there was this man with a deerhound on this grassy knoll. He had long white eyebrows.
The man, not the dog.
The man. And he had a black and green white kilt.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's standing there. And now, this was, I got into dogs in 1959, and I turned professional handling in 1965, so I'm like a sponge.
Right.
Learn all this stuff, see? I didn't know what it was. So I researched and found out who had it. And what his name was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a famous dog. I mean, Champion Leith, Ian of Dalmahoy.
Oh, wow.
He's behind all the pedigrees here. And his name was Keith Allen, which was Dalmahoy at the time. But they split up and his wife went to become Frida. And I was so taken by that dog that I thought, I better go watch him in the group. And he took like 5 or 6 strides. He was around the ring. There were small rings back then.
Right.
And he was handled by a handler named Doug Bundock, who had a red and black and white blazer on. Now, all this memory came out of me in these details, and this is the spooky part of it. So when I bought this dog for this client, we got Gigi. She was a very, very, very close, almost a half-brother, half-sister breeding to that dog.
Oh, my gosh.
By the grassy
knoll. That you saw on the grassy knoll.
All those years later, isn't that something?
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
Yeah. The client, she wanted another dog in another group.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to try to buy her one. Between a Siberian and a Scottish Deerhound, I saw the Scottish Deerhound, and it didn't take but 3 or 4 strides around. I said, inspire.
I want that one.
Yeah. And so later, she came with us, and that's when we got talked into breeding her.
Mm-hmm.
And Jana took over the reins, because she got all the magazines and correspondence and all
and
of that.
And Jenny, he started in Shepherds, but you started in Borzoi? That was your original breed, kind of?
Mainly, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. I had an Afghan.
Okay.
Or two.
Okay.
But nothing competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Borzois were the first breed that I bred.
Okay.
I mean, she had some good stock to start with.
Yeah, I had some nice Borzois.
She did very well. Anyway, she researched, and she found this dog in Detroit. And I looked at it and said, yeah, that's it. He was an older dog. And he was more line bred back to that Ian of Dalmahoy.
That same dog.
The dog in the grassy knoll.
Yeah. Doesn't that just figure?
So we didn't want to send her back to Detroit. And he was getting older. So then we found a son of his in Seattle and bred to him.
So what I'm hearing is you had that vision.
What you're hearing is the emotional part of getting that vision.
Right.
And it doesn't go away. You can't get away from it.
No, you can't. And I think that's so important for as we think about our vision for our own breed or as we're judging other breeds, that vision, that picture that's in your head is so defines like my vision of a Scottish Deerhound is you showing.
And that was that emotional for you.
Was, right. That was just was emotional so, for like, me. Boom.
And it's ongoing. And
it's important to get the right imprint right up front.
That's right.
Right.
That's
right. So what happens, right? What happens when you make an imprint and that dog is like fugly?
Okay, okay. I figured that out. I figured that out. Those breeders that do that, and it's emotional. It's the dog that they found when they visited their attorney or whatever, and it's just a piece of crap, but it's a sweet, neat dog and all that, and they fell in love with it, and now they get one and they go to breed it. And I say they are PM breeders.
PM?
Mm-hmm. Point makers.
That's awful.
But they're stuck. They're stuck in
that
mode.
They have a vision that is not necessarily of a high quality
That's
dog.
Right. That's
yeah,
right.
It's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of Dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details.
So have you had any luck or experience with evolving that vision? So you find someone who wants to do it right, but has a vision, an emotional attachment to this vision that's wrong.
It's possible.
Okay, so how do we do that?
Well, there's quite a few secrets, but the first secret...
I'm asking you for the secrets, man.
The first secret is to have that positive vision. On a scale of 1 to 10, you're up there, 8 or 9. If you have a 5 or 6 or 4 or 5...
vision?
They have to own up to it. They have to face it.
They have to accept that vision that's in their mind.
Because there's 7 secrets. I'll read them off to you. That's one.
Okay.
The imprint.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent ink.
It is. And, tattooed on my brain.
But the other is mentors and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our regard, we had experience in, I had shepherds and she had experience in Borzoi.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a lot of mistakes in my first breed. And so did she, but not that many. You did really well. So you got to have
experience.
You got, and some mentors to say, hey.
You missed the boat with that one.
Yeah.
Well, there's a learning curve there.
Yeah.
Right. And we all have it. And I think that's important to acknowledge and accept and say, it's okay. We all started in this same place. The point is then you have to move past that place.
Yeah. You have to be willing to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you have to start with foundation stock. We did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had this great bitch. She was tremendous. That was luck.
It was luck.
We happened to get her, but that's what we wanted.
But maybe not.
Yeah. But maybe not, because you had the vision.
We had choice, and we wanted her.
Mm-hmm.
The other secret, the fourth secret, I gave you 3. Imprint, experience, mentors, and foundation stock.
Yes.
And then you have to have a dedication and a commitment to that breed. Tough to do it with 2 or 3 breeds.
Right.
Because you ran out of money, you ran out of ideas.
Run out of money, I think, is a big one for a lot of us. I mean, in today's society, I think that's really real. I mean, we have to just state it right out there.
Money is part of the dedication and commitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to commit. Yeah.
That I'm not going to have a diamond tiara and a cruise to Mexico. I'm going to raise dogs.
Yeah. It's not a money-making venture.
And our mission statement has been, we want to leave this breed better off than when we got into it.
Tell me your most important thing about mowing. History.
History? What I talked to you about earlier?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to tell people that because I think that's really important.
Well, we're talking some history here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ignoring history is like mowing lawn in the dark. You can't see where you're going unless you can see where you've been.
Right.
So part of the commitment, part of the dedication is to keep all these records. Because every litter is like a scientific project.
Yes.
So you keep detailed data, records. I mean, we've got all our records.
The stack of folders you guys can't see.
No, but it's all of our records on every dog we've bred. We took 10 dogs in as stud dog puppies. Mm-hmm. And we had the foundation, and we imported a bitch from Norway. And we actually bred, I think, about 95 deerhounds.
Mm-hmm. Actually, puppies produced.
Puppies produced.
Your winning record on 94 puppies produced, I have to say, is unbelievable.
Well,
I'm sorry, no, it really is. Yes,
it is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, and well,
That was 14 litters, but you have to include our foundation, the import bitch, which was all of our breeding. We imported her back.
Right.
So it's 105 deerhounds.
I understand, but what I'm saying is, and we'll pull up that list here in a minute and talk about it, but what I'm saying is in 30 years, in 14 litters.
40 years.
Yeah. No, it was, we got our first deerhound in 1980.
79.
Okay, and 40 years.
Yeah.
It's almost 40 years.
Right? 14 litters, 100 dogs, and you have, is it
now? How many champions?
75.
75 champions?
75 of the 95 are champions. And is it now 11 or 12 best in show winners?
Well, 11 individual dogs have won best in shows. Here in the States.
In the U.S.
But then two of them are over in Norway that went best in show. And one was the number one dog in the country one year.
So what I'm saying is take the numbers, and we do this all the time, and everybody gets really jacked up about statistics and who's number one this and who's number one that. But I think it's very important when we look at these things to look at percentages. You're talking about 10% of your produced puppies are best in show winners.
Uh-huh.
That is almost unheard of.
It's pretty high, yeah, especially in a rare breed, I'd say.
Exactly my point. Not a flashy, this isn't a poodle or an Irish setter. This is a Scottish deerhound. I'm sorry, I love them. They're elegant, they're stunning, but they are not flashy show dogs. No. And they shouldn't be.
No.
46 best in shows, I think we've won.
Amazing.
Unreal.
It is. And this is why we're sitting here and we're trying to help people learn from you, because we're in a world where we can't all have 100 dog kennels.
That's right.
So,
and part of the beauty of it is, I think, we had one dog that was out specialed all the time by a handler, but otherwise we've pretty much done it by ourselves. There's been the occasional handler now that we're old and decrepit.
Old and decrepit makes a difference. Trust me, I'm now joining the ranks of old and decrepit. It's killing me.
Yeah, it's hard.
It is. Terrible.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard
primarily on our handle.
But we pretty much by Ray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I won one of them. Yay.
Good job.
But yeah, Ray's pretty much done it. And we were working people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did it out of our home while raising a family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't hear that story very much.
No, you don't.
But it can be done. That's
exactly
the good.
And this is, again, why I'm talking to you, because I want you guys, my listeners, to hear this story. This is inspiration. This is real. This can be done. And this is how you do it. And that's why I wanted you guys to join us.
Well, we break it up into pieces with this 7 secrets. That was kind of an idea that, some years ago, I came up with, after I got back from Espen, I figured it out. How would I break this out?
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the road quite a bit showing Michael. And
remember Michael well.
And Taffy had Ouija out there. Mm-hmm. And I was going different places. Mm-hmm. And
avoiding each other desperately.
And both dogs Ouija turned out to be the all-time best in show winner in the history of the breed. And Michael ended up being all-time history male of the
and that's her father.
Right. But I spent a lot of time with this at that time. And started the file here. It's that thick.
We're going to include the 7 secrets to success. And we're going to list them in the blog post. So in case anybody has any questions, they'll be right there. You'll email them to me.
And I spent a lot of time, Bill Shelton and I spent a lot of time when he was showing his corgi and I was showing the special male. And he helped me put this together.
Both I like of them. It.
Yeah, yeah.
I
and
like it.
We thought about writing a book, and then it's ever changing.
Yes. Well, and new things come along. Society changes. Yep, yep. The world changes. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about that, because as we're talking history, and you can't mow the lawn in the dark, right? So let's put the spotlight on the back lawn that we're trying to mow these straight lines. Take the history that we have and apply it to today, because today's world ain't the 80s that all came up in.
It's very different.
And I mean, I've known you guys that long. And so think about these 40 years that we've all grown up in this sport and, you know, improved and gotten better and honed our skills. That sport doesn't really exist today.
Sadly.
The way we, truly sadly, but the way we came up in it, mm-hmm. and I know we came up at the same time and kind of the same area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That isn't a reality for a lot of people today.
No, it's very different.
So let's take some of that history and apply it to today and see what we can give these folks today.
We do have a lot of very, very good breeders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of good, I want to be positive on this.
Yes.
We have a lot of great talent coming up. Handling.
Exhibitors.
My God, handling is just phenomenally
improved from what improved. We had when we were kids.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Way true.
Judging has declined. I'm sorry. I mean, we had so many great judges back then that it was, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. I'll do better next time.
Right. Now there are very few of those now.
Yeah, we have very few judges that...
That have that make you want to sit up and say, yes, sir, yes,
well,
ma'am.
They are the custodians of our breeding program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're the ones that we go to. And it's hopefully we have some help, some wisdom, some respect of what we're doing.
Yeah. And we have some great judges.
Oh,
we do.
We do. We do.
I think
we have so many more of them, though, that the percentages aren't quite the
same. And it's the number of shows. You have to have people to judge the shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Let me finish the seven secrets and then get that thought out of the way. Four, we talked about dedication and commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a breeding plan. I mean, what's going to direct your breeding plans? You're going to line breed? You're going to outcross? How often are you going to line breed? One of my excellent mentors in a little booklet was Lloyd Brackett, German Shepherd's Plan Breeding.
Yes.
Follow that, you're not going to lose.
and we've talked about it, you guys, listeners, a couple times on the podcast, and it's the thoroughbred formula, the Brackett formula, that's been very, very successful for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I had the fortune of, I never met Lloyd Brackett, but his daughter, I became very, very close friends with.
Mm.
And after Lloyd was gone, she taught me a lot. Mm. Taught me a lot.
He was shepherds too, right?
German shepherds, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Longworth. Mm-hmm. Longworth shepherds.
Yeah.
And this is a sixth secret. And Pat Craig passed this on to us. Presentation.
Yeah.
Now, you wouldn't think that maybe because you're a breeder. But no, presentation is important. You can't just breed dogs and turn them loose out there and...
In the wild.
Nobody knows.
Right.
So you have to have conditioning, grooming, presentation to ultimately, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, it needs to be up there too. All these things, I kind of rate a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, presentation is important because many, many people cannot recognize a dog in the rough. It's true.
It's true. The diamond in the rough. I'm sorry. Even a great judge, it's not easy. We're not asking them to find a diamond in the rough. Right.
Right.
It's our job to bring them that polished gemstone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Just happened to think of this. There was a judge many years ago from Texas, and his wife groomed the dogs, wire fox terriers, and Forrest Hall and Gillian, I think was his last name.
Mm-hmm.
They did the fox terriers. They wouldn't do them until his wife got them all groomed and put them out there for them to look at.
Oh, my God.
So there's a big thing about finding dogs in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
And good dog people
familiar.
Do, but it is still the marquee out there in front of the fairground says dog show.
Show.
It doesn't say dog judging.
Yeah, that's what Pat used to say. It says dog show. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's part of the deal.
Yeah.
All right, what's number seven?
Number seven is a wrap-up. I call it sharpen the saw.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get cocky. Don't get arrogant. Take your wins.
Always be humble and kind.
And go back and read your friggin' standard.
Oh, please.
I mean, even though you think you had it memorized, mm-hmm. go refresh yourself and do everything you can on research, health issues.
Mm-hmm. History of a breed.
Yeah. Go back and keep trying to learn what yourself. Got you into this breed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that wraps up Seven Secrets.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's good. Like it.
And each individual who wants to, I mean, these are not really secrets. Everybody knows that.
Well, I don't know that everybody does. And it's a wonderful distillation of 40
it's
years.
It's a nice reminder, I think.
Yeah.
It's just a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
Just a reminder. Mm-hmm. And if you want to succeed higher, I've broken 7 different breeder levels out.
Yeah.
And we term ourselves as being successful breeders. Mm-hmm. But there's great breeders and there's legend breeders.
Well, like master breeders.
Yeah.
Like Pat.
But I'm sorry. You guys call yourselves successful breeders. I'm saying 10% best in show dogs. Yeah, I'm putting you in the master breeder category. Sorry.
Well, I'll tell you why. We bred successfully and our percentages were high, but it would be great. And that's one mistake we've made, maybe, is not breeding more. Mm-hmm. And get more of the gene pool out there. So
I think that is a regret.
So you have to have a gene pool out there that you have influenced. And we influence a lot of people by the way our dogs looked and by a few people that bred our genes. But if you want to be really a legend or really a great breeder.
Master breeder.
You got to have more numbers than we had.
Yeah, I think that's a regret of ours. But remember, I mean, we were in limited resources, mm-hmm. working, trying to, you know.
But I think it's so applicable to so many people.
Right. You can still do well.
Right.
And you can still do a good job for your breed, mm-hmm. on a limited basis. Mm-hmm. I think our numbers are what would maybe keep us from being a master breeder. We just don't have tons of numbers.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have 20 generations. Mm-hmm. We just don't.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.